Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. I'm your host, Rodney Mathers. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. My special guest today is Dr. Catherine Kelly. She is a licensed practicing psychologist, consultant, and speaker, and she's developed something called Soul Health, and it's a model in which can be used to help you get through some of the hard times in life, and that includes coming home from an incarceration and getting yourself reestablished. We're going to talk with Dr. Kelly about just doing that when we come back. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey there again. You know, one of my favorite things in the world is to get email from you. And I'd like for you to tell me your success story. I'd like for you to tell me how things are going for you since you've come home from incarceration. If you have a family or loved one who's getting ready to come home or has recently come home and you have a topic that you think would be interesting for the show, pass it on along to me. And the way you can do that is at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Now, y'all drop me a line. Let me know how you're doing, okay? Welcome back to The Journey of Hope. Our special guest today is Dr. Catherine T. Kelly. She's got a book out called Soul Health, Aligning with Spirit for Radiant Living. Dr. Catherine Kelly, welcome to The Journey of Hope.
Yes, thanks, Rodney. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's good to have you here. And let's just start off, maybe we could get a little bit of background about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're coming from and how you came to do the kinds of things that you're doing now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I am actually considered what's called a health psychologist. And so even though I do traditional therapy, I've also done a lot of my training in health-related fields and arenas and kind of meandered like many people in their careers to come to where I am now. I was actually a professor at Wake Forest University in their family medicine department before I decided that I really needed to kind of branch off in my own way and went into private practice and then really started developing my own model, which is what this book is about, the Soul Health Model. And it's really a model that is based on what I call the 10 branches of the human condition. In other words, you know, in everyday psychotherapy, what I see are people day in, day out struggling with really all aspects of humanness. And there's 10 different branches that I consider to be those main branches of the human condition that we do tend to struggle with. But the model itself is really sort of a self-development model as well as a soul development model. And what I mean by that is that it goes deeply into the whole idea that everybody is an individual and everybody has different ideas and needs for what makes them feel most vibrant and radiant. And so the book really goes into explaining branch by branch, per se, how to really assess yourself and how to get your life into a process of balance and realizing that we're going to go through storms in life just like trees do, which is kind of the metaphor that I use for the model, and that we just have to learn how to weather them and readjust and redevelop as we go on.
Okay. And look, could we get into some of the branches that you're talking about? You talk about the 10 branches. Maybe you could name a few of those.
Yeah, let's go ahead and list them. And then if you want to just jump in and ask about whichever branch you would
perfect.
Like, that would
go for it.
Fine.
Perfect.
Okay. The first one that most people think about when they think about wellness or life balance is physical health. And so, of course, one of the main branches is physical health. Excuse me. And then there's, of course, psychological branch. There's a social branch, an interpersonal branch, and I'll explain that in just a second, a spiritual branch, a financial branch, a sexual branch, environmental, intellectual, and occupational. I pair that into one branch. And then also, last but certainly not least, the recreational branch. And the reason that I separate the social and the interpersonal is many of the wellness models out there actually pair those into one branch. But I have separated those out because I think we can have lots of people in our lives, which reflects the social branch, but that those dynamics or relationships that we have with those people may or may not be that healthy. So the interpersonal branch really represents the dynamics that we hold with people as well as ourselves and the world.
Let's stop right there and go to the social branch because, you know, this audience is ex-offenders, and a lot of people who go to prison, come out of prison, tend to go back to that same old grind, you know, and I've always tried to figure out, you know, why does that happen? I mean, after the punitive part of prison and for years and years. And then, you know, you come out and you do okay for a while, and then it's those same old friends again that are obviously unhealthy. How would you address that in the things that you teach?
I think that's a wonderful question because one of the main things is that we all go to our default coping, our default comfort zones, our default familiarities, and that is why many people, again, when they leave prison or jail, that basically they kind of gravitate toward what's familiar to them because it feels safe, even if it's not so safe. So it might be safe because it's a familiar place for them to be. They're not used to branching out into healthier kinds of relationships or healthier dynamics. And when a person is under stress, the first thing we do is we go to our default, which may or may not be healthy. Right. And so that's really, again, part of what this whole book is about, is becoming very aware of a consciousness is a word that I use a lot, becoming very conscious of what's not working in each one of those branches.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the most important things, I think, for an ex-offender to think about is, was my social dynamic working? And was that helping me or hurting me? And what do I need to do to outgrow or evolve beyond those old social circles or those social dynamics in order to grow above and beyond what got me into trouble in the first place.
Okay, so I think what I hear you saying is that there's an inability to properly cope. That
yes.
Maybe there's a lack of coping skills. And so does, you know, this idea of soul health, does it help you with your coping skills?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I want to say one other thing about that coping skill is that, again, it kind of goes back to that familiarity, but the social piece, I think for anybody, we all want to belong. You know, humans are pack animals, and so we want to belong somewhere. And so if our coping mechanism of falling into a certain pattern of the people we choose to be around or live with, if that, again, is not a healthy dynamic, then, you know, of course, that's something to grow beyond. But yes, this whole idea of soul health is getting to that deep knowingness about ourselves, which, again, is not easy for a lot of people because we're not taught to go from our deepest part of us in order to get through life. We're basically taught to go through our head, which, again, may or may not be faulty with how we think.
Mm-hmm. And our inability to deal with the stressors, the lack of these coping skills. It seems like that, you know, the guys that I knew in prison and some people that I know now, and even myself to some degree, you know, I have to really watch out for this. There is a tendency to, let's see, when the stress gets high, to kind of lean on things that aren't healthy.
Absolutely.
And, you know, like maybe an addiction of some sort, or how would you address that? I mean,
and you know, that is a probably, even for people who haven't been incarcerated, I think it's difficult because we do lean on things that are unhealthy, but that goes back to that self, that instant gratification, that we look for pleasure beyond pain. And a lot of times, you know, when we're stressed, if we're, you know, I'm thinking about all of the stressors that go into trying to reacclimate into society after incarceration. I think about, you know, of course you're going to want some comfort in that, and the first place people want to turn is to whatever that initial or immediate kind of gratification is. So yes, whether it's, you know, alcohol or drugs or gambling or whatever the, you know, that unhealthy coping mechanism is, getting to the heart of whatever that is and moving beyond it is difficult. And from what I have experienced with folks that I've worked with, you know, there's some training when you're in, you know, a prison situation, but there's not a lot. There's not enough, let's put it that, but there's not enough in order for people to reintegrate without it feeling
A lot of it's ridiculous. And everybody that brings that up, I always want to tell this story because I want you to know this. If you ever run across a client or a patient that's been incarcerated, here is the honest to God thing that happens. When you're getting ready to be released in Texas, they put you through a program called Changes. And you watch films that literally teach you things like if you're going to go to a job interview, you need to comb your hair and brush your teeth. And it's absolutely ridiculous. And then they wonder why, you know, people turn around and come right back. It's almost like they set people up to fail. But I like for people to know about Changes because it's a crock. Right. There's nothing going on there that is going to help somebody, you know, learn how to deal with the stressors in their life. And I was lucky enough when I got out to get some therapy. My family insisted on it, and I was able to learn about some of these things. But you know, most people don't. So. And I've noticed as I've done this podcast that this idea of dealing with stress, it seems to all boil down to that. You know, it seems that the way people get in trouble is their inability to deal with the stressors in their life.
Absolutely.
And not
have a proper set of tools.
And so when you talk about soul health and getting in touch with the soul, what was this idea of conscious evolution? Tell us about that. How does that work?
So being systematic and conscious about which one or ones of these branches need some attention. And the plan itself walks you through that priority process of setting the first, second, or third branches that need some help into action. And then creating a bit of a, it's not necessarily a goal list, but a method of cleaning out within each one of those branches what's not working, and then filling up within each one of these branches what might help them function or evolve even more. So it's just a process of going through that, and it's done wonderfully within families or groups because then you can really negotiate with each other for which branch might be the best.
And this this idea of developing a plan, it just doesn't, you know, it's not just for coming home from prison, or we're just using that as something that's that we do here on the show. But I mean, everybody's had a broken heart or has had rough times, and this will help them get through that, right?
Right, absolutely. And it's just really a conscious, I keep saying that word, but really it's a conscious way of saying, gosh, what's not working in my life, and what do I have the energy to work on, or what do I know I need to work on? So, you know, I think, you know, I say in the book that we, our bodies have evolved about as far as we're going to, but our hearts and our souls, you know, we can keep growing and learning and moving beyond our old patterns every day. But it does take that extra amount of attention to wanting to move forward.
And you talk, you mentioned earlier about being a steward to your soul. And can we talk about decision-making for a second? How does, like, say, having a plan help you with your decision-making?
Absolutely. That plan, and it's just really like anything else, if we don't spend a little bit of time looking at and planning out where we want to go, in other words, setting a vision for where we want to go, then we may meander through life and really not get a whole lot of satisfaction out of it. But that soul health plan, what it does is it helps you literally systematically kind of plan out a step-by-step process to keep you in check with yourself. And it doesn't mean that you fail if you don't stay in check. What it means is to just stay conscious of what got you off track in the first place and just keep working toward getting yourself into a new set of behaviors. And so that decision-making, it's just a way to illuminate what it is in particular that needs to be worked on at any given time so that, again, I think it goes back to the prioritization of what's right in front of us. A lot of times we don't necessarily want to prioritize what actually is the biggest challenge.
As you read through the book, Dr. Kelly, and you devise a plan, is this something that people can do by themselves, or do they need help doing it? How does that work?
You know, actually, how the book is laid out is that I tried to put it in as basic terms as possible so that once you understand what each branch is, that there's one entire chapter devoted to teaching people how to develop that plan, how to tweak that plan, how to review that plan and revisit it, and then maybe, you know, 6 months to a year later, look at it again and revise it as needed for that particular part in life. So really, the way that I tried to develop this book was to be user-friendly. Now, it's not to say that it could not, you know, I'm biased. I think, you know, psychotherapy can be a wonderful investment for everybody. This book, in fact, can be used as a tool in conjunction with psychotherapy, but it's really designed to be able to do it on your own.
Okay, and you said that it could be used as a tool. I'm curious. This is an issue that comes up from time to time. You know, people that have been to prison we've got big egos. and we don't like people telling us what to do. And it's just this prison mentality that we have to break. And one of those things that we run into is sometimes a psychiatrist will tell us that we need, one of the popular antidepressants. Does this take into consideration medications? Is it something that, do you deal with that at all? Can you tell us about that?
That's actually a really good question, and that's one that I have not been asked before. And I think it's, I have not addressed medication in this book at all, because as a psychologist, I think there is a place for medication, but I don't think it is the fix. The all fix all kind of thing, because medications will take the symptoms away. They do not take the problems away. And like you just said, a lot of times psychiatrists or other physicians will, prescribe a medication, but they don't give a whole lot of education on what to do with their lives other than that.
That's right.
And that's why I think, you know, when I do therapy, I'm a fairly non-traditional therapist anyway, because I am all about self-empowerment. Because we can't rely on psychiatry, we can't rely on, you know, physicians or really anybody else. And the soul health model is all about recognizing that you are your own person and that you're responsible for wherever you go in life. And you can ask for help, but you have to know yourself at a deep enough level to know whether or not you do need a medication or whether or not it's really helping. And then also, if there's something beyond the medication. Now, I tend to be biased because I do therapy day in, day out, and I see people who are over-medicated, I see people who are under-medicated, but I think it's the deep exploration of yourself, whether or not you're on medication, that makes a difference.
This is great stuff. Wouldn't it be great, Catherine, if everybody could read this book before they were released from prison?
I think that would be fabulous.
Wouldn't that be super? I just wish there was something like this or something like it to help people on their way out. This is just wonderful. I highly recommend it. Dr. Catherine Kelly, the book is called Soul Health, Aligning with Spirit for Radiant Living. Dr. Kelly, how do we get the book and get in touch with you if we need to? How do we do all that?
Absolutely. I do have a website. It's www.drkatherinetkelly.com, and you can order the book on my website, or you can also go to any major bookstore. If they don't have it in stock, they can order it for you. It's on Amazon.com, and it's also on BarnesandNoble.com.
Wonderful. I want to thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope today.
Great. Thank you so much.
We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Okay, something I want to rant about. I'm not even really sure where I'm going with this, but a little experience I had yesterday at Walmart. Went into Walmart, and so my wife and I are buying a few things, and in the aisle next to ours is where they have the cigarettes, okay? But that aisle was closed. Now, we know by experience that Walmart won't let you buy cigarettes unless you're in an aisle that has the dispenser for the cigarettes. So the lady starts to ring us up and she says, you'll have to go over there to buy the cigarettes. And my wife said, well, wait a minute, that aisle is closed. And she said, well, I don't know, you know, kind of mumbled. And but she, I mean, all they have to do is go get the cigarettes. And I don't know why they don't do that, but so I cut the lady off from talking to my wife. I said, wait a minute. So you're going to make the customer that wants to buy a product here jump through 12 hoops, you know, when they're just right there within arm's reach of you. And she goes, well, sir, you know, and she got kind of snotty with me. And I said, well, where's your manager? And the manager came over there with just this amazingly snotty attitude. And I said, get away from me. Don't even talk to me. Go away. And so I'm going on and on about how ridiculous this is. And I'll tell you something. I don't care if you've been convicted of a crime or, you know, you're an ex-felon like me. You have the right to speak up for yourself. And I encourage you to do it. And I'll tell you something else. The words that you use are protected by the First Amendment. You can pop off any way you want to. You know, it's not smart, and it's, you know, I don't recommend that you use curse words and that sort of thing. But if you want to flip somebody off at Walmart, you can do it. It's not against the law, okay? My point, I don't recommend you do that. It's kind of an extreme, but my point is you can be a little confrontational. There's nothing wrong with that. We want to be assertive in the way that we speak to people. We don't want to be passive. We don't want to be doormats. We don't want to be aggressive. But we want to be assertive. And so in my attempt to be assertive yesterday, I may have crossed the line a little bit into aggressive. But the result was that all of a sudden, here come these two big burly dudes. I guess they were Walmart security. And they're standing there at the aisle with their arms folded. And I looked at one of them and I said, what's up? And he said, what's up with you? Very confrontational. So now I'm angry because I feel like I'm being physically intimidated because I expressed my view about buying a pack of cigarettes. This has gone way out of control. At Walmart, you guys are a bunch of morons. You're idiots. You've got two burly dudes standing there with me and my wife with their arms folded. They've got something in their tie. They're wearing ties. And they're talking into it like they're Secret Service or something. And I couldn't help but laugh at them. I told one of the guys, I said, you know what? You're a big old fat ass. Now, that was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. But boy, he sure picked that tie up and started talking into it. And so they followed us out the store. They were within maybe a foot or two behind us as we pushed our basket out of the store. And this is all over me having a disagreement about the way they sell cigarettes at Walmart. And so they're physically going to intimidate people. I'll tell you what, man, those guys, I had to really keep myself in check. But I know people that that I serve time with. You do that to them and you're going to get hurt. You know, those guys are willing to go to jail. And it's unfortunate. But this Walmart security, and then I looked it up on the internet, Walmart security. There's pages and pages of how abusive Walmart security is. They have shot people. They've tased people. They've accused parents of kidnapping the children because the child didn't look like the parent. These are true stories that I'm telling you right now. So my advice to you is you go to Walmart, fine, but I wouldn't go there. The tactics that they're using when a customer wants to express their point of view, what kind of business physically intimidates the customer to leave the store for expressing their point of view? I don't know, man. Walmart, I'm done with you, and I know it doesn't make any difference to you, but my God, it's like Nazi Germany inside of Walmart if you want to express your view. If you've got a similar story about Walmart, send me a line. I'd like to know about it. MathersRodney@yahoo.com. We'll be right back after this. And we're to the end of another show. I want to thank my special guest, Dr. Catherine Kelly, and I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on The Journey of Hope.